Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the West Ham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with We Are West Ham, James Jones, and the returning Will Pugh. Unbelievably, he has managed to make it back. Clearly not busy today. He's managed time to fit us in for the next hour. He will be joining us, and you can join us too. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 70 20 558. We're going to be talking all about that game, the Friday Night Lights against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. What we made of it, the game is gone. VAR taking up a big part of that. Then we'll be looking a little bit towards the transfer business this month. Obviously, the Randolph Medical taking forever, it seems. Johnny from Woodgate Sound, the longest medical in the history of the game. Then we will be looking at the weekend's game with Everton. And obviously, the West Ham Mystery Players Rogue Players Quiz will be in full force as it's the first one of the year. Will is back. Will versus James. Will, it's so good to have you back, mate. Honestly, you wasn't listening live because why would you? Clearly didn't think a lot of us. But me and James and Tom last week, we struggled to get through it, mate. We missed you.
Be honest, Charlie, I did much I tried to listen live. The signal up in the French Alps just isn't as good as you'd think it would be, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I can't help it. I'm just a global jet setter, aren't I?
What can you say? I mean,
James got his brand new scarf on and his roll neck.
Well.
He heard I was wearing a roll neck tonight, so he's put a roll neck on. Do you know what I mean? Trendsetter, Charlie.
You are a bit of a trendsetter. Did you two phone each other at this? Because for the listeners, honestly, the picture, James in a beautiful grey roll neck, Will's in a darker grey.
Beautiful grey roll neck.
Yeah, it's sweet.
I love, the difference is that I make it look good.
Oh,
see? Honestly, I did actually listen back last week on the pod and... Yeah. I'm a bigger man than I'm not going to lie myself to your two petulant, sort of childish, hurtful levels. Mm. But, you know, some of the words were taken on board and I will be remembering them for this year.
Yeah, ooh. Did you make much of that? We might be acquiring Jimmy Walker and replacing
you. Yeah,
huge
side. I don't know about a replacement. I think two Jimmys in one studio is probably a bit overkill. But, I don't want to point fingers at who needs to leave, but your name's not Jimmy, neither is mine. All right, James, what do your mates call you?
My name's James, not Jimmy. My old football coach should call me Jimmy, though.
Yeah, be honest, I reckon if it was Jimmy Walker, we could certainly make room for him in here,
Jimmy. Yeah, definitely. The show from the dangerous duo to the terrible trio or something. But let's look at the Sheffield United game now. Obviously, VAR taking his part before we get into that. And Will, obviously, first time speaking to you, want to get your thoughts on the Moyes appointment. What did you make of the game itself? Firstly, on Friday night,
right. Well, I got a little bit of abuse on Twitter, mainly from James after Bournemouth.
Well, James got a little bit of abuse the week before, so he said
something
in the water.
Join the club, Will. Join the club, mate.
My abuse certainly wasn't in the James Jones level, but I tweeted out after the Bournemouth game when everyone was singing and dancing and arranging the Europa League flights for next year and all that sort of thing. You know, whoopee, it's great. It wasn't even that bad. I said, everyone, can we all just slow down a minute.
I don't remember anyone saying, let's book our flights to Europe next year.
There was, honestly, some of the West Ham Twitter after that Bournemouth game, it was a bit like, blimey, it's Bournemouth, everyone. Can we just settle down? And as we can see, got thumped by Watford at home this weekend, obviously going down. All I said was...
Really? You think they're going down?
Bournemouth, I would say so, yeah.
Sorry.
I think we've got some actual proper football teams to come up against in the next few games. I think the tweet said, I reckon we'll win 2 or 3 out of the next 13. And I genuinely think we've got such a hard cluster of games. I think that last 6 where we've actually got some winnable games, that it's going to come down to that. And I do think it'd be close. And I just simply said, hold off on the survival party for now. James just replied with a snoring emoji, which was hurtful again.
Petulant you, James.
You're so very sensitive, mate. So sensitive.
No, but all I mean is, and then I think Friday was just sort of proof of that. I'm not going to be one of those, well, I will be one of those tweeting out going, see, I told you so, I am that petty. But I just think Friday was a game up against a decent team. If the equaliser, I think everyone can admit that we probably didn't deserve that. I know the VAR controversy, so to speak, was quite bad, but I don't think we really deserve to get anything out of the game really anyway. And I think that's going to happen a few more times in the weeks to come, unfortunately.
Well, Will saying there, James, that, you know, maybe West Ham didn't deserve that equaliser, didn't deserve to get anything out of the game. David Moyes afterwards saying that, you know, proud of his players, really put in an effort, really put in a performance, should have got something from the game. Two different opinions there. Where do you stand on it?
See, I'm flicking through Twitter after and I found a lot of the criticism towards the performance quite harsh.
You better be careful what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've turned my phone off just in case. I found it quite harsh. I mean, I didn't think the performance was that bad as people have been saying. It wasn't the worst performance I've seen at West Ham under Moyes or under any recent manager. Really, it wasn't a terrible performance. Mm. We played much worse under Moyes 18 months ago. And I don't. I think that although, yeah, okay, Sheffield United probably shaded it on a night, I don't think it had that. The goal stood, which it should have stood. We'll get onto that. I don't think anyone would have said, oh, West Ham didn't deserve that point. West Ham didn't deserve that point. I thought, you know, we had our chances during the game. We had a goal ruled out for offside. Fair enough, it was offside. That goal should have been ruled out, rightly so. Unlike the other one. I just thought, you know, Haller missed a couple of clear-cut chances. Lanzini missed a clear-cut chance before we got the equaliser. You know, we had our chances. Sheffield United probably had as many clear-cut chances. They just happened to put one away when we pretty much gifted it to them. Mm. So they were just a little bit more clinical than we were on the night. I don't think the performance was that bad. I saw some promising signs, but in the end, a rubbish rule in football basically robbed us of a point.
Yeah, and obviously another big incident from that game, Will, and it seemed one that's happening again this season. Fabianski starting that game, going off injured. David Martin has to come in. That was the error that led to the goal. Another goalkeeping error, another injury to Fabianski.
Yeah, but at least we've moved really quickly in January to pick up another goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute.
Yeah, unlike Villa.
Villa, who pick up a Premier League experienced keeper, have identified that they've got a problem in the goalkeeping position. So,
would you want Reina though? See, I know it's easy to say that. Would you have had Reina?
I don't know. Someone, just anyone. Just it shows a bit of intent, at least, doesn't it? Whether he works out or not, at least it shows. Oh, look, we need a goalkeeper, so we'll go and get a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky, but how much of a blow then, obviously, because David Martin, he obviously had that terrific Stamford Bridge performance. He comes in, the error that led to the goal, obviously Fabianski injured again. It's the same old problems, James.
It is the same old problems. I think
it's pretty rotten luck.
It's rotten luck to get the same injury. I know he's only just come back, so you know the chances of him aggravating that old injury is quite high still. You do wonder whether they did rush him back maybe 1 or 2 weeks too early.
It was a little bit touch and go before the game he came back for, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone was a bit, oh, he's back already, is he?
Yeah, and then, you know, everyone was up in arms because he saved that penalty against Leicester on his first game back, and everyone went, oh, brilliant, we got him back.
After giving it away.
It is rotten luck. I think it's harsh to really put much blame on David Martin. I mean, I don't know whether you watched it, but just when he was waiting to come on, he looked like a bag of nerves. You know, he was, you know, blowing out really hard, and he was just, you could say he just didn't really prepare himself to be on that pitch. So to make a mistake, probably not surprising. But it was a really weird goal to give away, given that Balbuena looked like he just sort of froze. Mm. He didn't realise he can move to the left a little bit and get the ball. Hopefully it's only 2 weeks for Fabianski, he can come back and come back into the team and so we can start winning again, because we never seem to win when he's not in the team.
Yeah, but obviously they don't want to rush him back again and then could aggravate
just
the injury.
Just don't let
again.
Him take goal kicks.
Yeah.
I mean,
give the goal kicks to Diop or Ogbonna or something, or I don't know, someone who can kick very far.
That's a bit 1999, that though, isn't it?
I know, yeah, but I mean, we need to act 1999.
When you get your players to take it and start off on a run.
1999, we finished fifth in the Premier League, so I'm happily going back to 1999.
There we go, bringing it back to 1999. West Ham, another stat from the game, have failed to score against the last four times they've played against newly promoted sides. They've failed to get on a score sheet. Weird stat, you know, you always get those stats out of the game. Why is that? They're struggling against sides that have just come up.
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of other sides in the league we've failed to score against as well, Charlie, to be fair.
It's not just them.
Nah. Yeah.
But look, to be fair, we scored two the other night, just neither of them counted.
Yes, probably what I'm on about. Let's talk about that goal then. You're saying that the goal should have stood. We just quickly speaking to Paul Mortimer on Lovesport Drive before this show, he was saying it's not the fact that the VAR here went, because VAR is just enforcing the rule. You know, they're getting that right. It's actually this handball rule is actually ridiculous. Will, I know we're going to get into it. What are you making of it all?
Honestly, I don't want to get into it anymore. It is genuinely boring now, isn't it?
All right, well, the show.
No, but it is. It's that same thing. Exactly what you've just said there. What what we'll end up doing in this conversation is going, yeah, the rule's bad, VAR's just enforcing it, the handball rule needs changing. Yes, it does. We're in week 20 of the Premier League now, I believe. Game week 20, and that just means there's been 20 weeks of the exact same conversation. It means we've got another 18 weeks to go, plus any European football, whatever. There is nothing else to it. The rules say that that shouldn't have counted. The only bit, the discrepancy and the only new sort of argument in all of this that I sort of cottoned onto this week and agree with is the inconsistencies. I know everyone throws up the Liverpool pictures, and they are hard to argue with, and I do agree when you, the inconsistencies in it, that's the thing that makes it even more discreditable, that's not a word at all, but you know what I'm saying, that's the thing that undermines it, that's it, even more is when there's discrepancies. If that rule, that poor rule, had been administered to every single club the all season up until now, whilst everyone would be in universal agreement it's still rubbish, they're not going to change it during a season, that's for sure. Everyone's going, oh, we should scrap VAR now. They're just not going to do that. The reality is they're not. They're going to, it has to be a level playing field for the entire season, otherwise that undermines the integrity of the whole competition. So they're not going to change anything now. It is a bad rule. The only thing is, it would be nice. There is a couple of instances where you think, oh, hang on a minute, that seemed to touch his hand, but that didn't seem to matter then. That's the bit that annoys me too much, but it's small fry in comparison to the whole thing, isn't it?
So, James, it's a goal for you, even though it touched his hand, it's not handball, the goal should stand.
Well, it surprised me that they've made this change to this rule, because I don't recall it actually ever being an issue.
It was just to get rid of the ambiguity of whether it's intentional or not, isn't it? Because different refs decided, had different ideas of what was intentional, so you had even less consistency. That was the idea, to bring some sort of consistency to it, wasn't it?
So now you've got goals being ruled out for basically other players kicking the ball at other players' hands, which, you know, some would say, okay, the Sheffield United player didn't mean to do it, he was just trying to tackle Declan Rice, and it happened to ricochet off Declan Rice and then went back onto the defender before he then regained control of the ball. But then some players might, you know, do that intentionally, and then suddenly you've got a form of cheating in the game. I'm not saying that happened on Friday night, because it didn't. It, you know, he just tried to tackle him.
Salah in the Champions League final?
Salah in the Champions League final is one of them.
That's obviously allowed because it's against Tottenham, but in other instances...
Yeah, I mean, we can let that one fly, but that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's what we want, the inconsistency. Exactly. We'll let that one fly.
Yeah, I just... The problem I've got with it is that in the rules, and someone's put a screenshot of what the rules actually say, and the rules actually say that, you know, if... it basically says use your common sense in this rule.
I know exactly what ones you mean. I've got a feeling that was from last year, because I saw the same ones, and I went, oh, hang on a minute. What?
Maybe it is from last year. I don't know.
I think this year's one, I'd just say, if it's a hand in build-up.
I still think there needs to be an element of common sense. If VAR looks at it, and VAR has to look at it, that's absolutely fine. VAR looks at that.
But we're taking that human element of common sense out of it, aren't we, when we're all going by this video replay? Because if it was common sense, it would be the referees, isn't it? Once he's had a look on the monitor and gone, look, come on, that's not handball. I mean, it is handball, but it's not. There's no intent there. So there's no element of this common sense you speak of, is there? We all want that.
I see your point.
We all want that, don't we, James?
They've got to look at... Okay, fair enough, they've got to check the goal for any problems, whether it's offside, you know, handball, I don't know, whether he's... whatever. But... They look at that replay there from Declan Rice, and it's quite clear that he's no way he could have got his arm out of the way of that ball, because like the players are three, what?
And he's not used it to bring it into him to give
foot,
him a better
he's
run.
He's a foot away from him. Right, they should be looking at that and going, okay, there was a handball there, but the player had no control over that handball. The player had no control over getting his hand away from it. He had no control over the situation, no control over the tackle that was being made upon him. So therefore, it can't be deemed as handball. It
wasn't an unnatural position.
Earlier in this season, this is the third goal we've had ruled out this season from handball. Antonio at Chelsea before the Southampton one, where he handballed it into the goal. Fair enough, he ruled that one out.
That was like a punch.
It was a punch. He's at the back post and he's sort of... and then the Southampton one. The Southampton one, less has been made of that one, because we ended up winning the game 1-0 anyway. So everyone was like, fair enough. But still, very similar situation where he was running to keep control of the ball and the ball flicked up and hit him in the arm. Mm. He was still in control of the ball. At the time, we already won him up at the time. At the time, I was like, oh, that's a little bit frustrating, but it is what it is. When it happens in the 92nd minute to have a point...
Well, that whole playground rule of ball to hand has gone, hasn't it, really?
I honestly, my whole view of VAR as a general rule, not just with this handball thing, is that we're at the most extreme level of the pendulum swing at the moment, because what's happened last season, there was all of this ambiguity around whether it was intentional or not. Is it ball to hand? Is he in an unnatural position? Blah, blah, blah. So the Premier League have gone, or the PGMOL have gone, right, we need some consistency. Therefore, we're just going to do black and white, really extreme. If it hits your hand in the build up to the goal, blah, blah, blah. So they've gone right the other way. And I'm hoping that next season they'll realise that that extreme really doesn't work. So now we've seen what it's like at both ends of that pendulum swing. They'll go, right, you know what, actually, we'll bring it back somewhere in the middle. That any contact with the hand is no good. So next year we'll look at it.
That is why you're back, Will. For facts like that, Will Pugh with a hard hit. In fact, I've got to say,
we've seen
the two extremes, and maybe we need to see a balance of it. Talking that Sheffield United review, we're going to be looking at the transfer business and that Randolph Medical next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the West Ham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with We Are West Ham, James Jones and Will Pugh. We were just talking about VAR and that Sheffield United game on Friday, but we're moving past it now. It's gone, it's done, it's dusted. We are looking to the future, and obviously Everton on the weekend. We will be previewing that game in a little bit. Paul McPartland from These Footy Times will be joining us to give us the opposition view. But before that, just before we'd done this show, we saw Karen Brady on Sky Sports News giving a little bit of an interview. I was watching Will more watching Karen more than I was watching Karen, because Will, fair to say, you wasn't over the moon with some of the stuff that Karen was saying.
No, I tell you what, I was over the moon with, though, Ian King. The segment was from Sky News, the business section they did earlier in the day. Ian King, the presenter, asked a couple of absolutely outstanding questions. The first one, deadpan as you like, so Karen, you took over West Ham 10 years ago and you were 17th in the Premier League. 10 years later, and you're 16th. So what's gone wrong? Absolutely outstanding. So, well, we've had some periods where we're more successful, and obviously
your Ian King impression was better than your Karen.
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing as well, the big thing, and the reason she was on there in the first place about the West Ham stuff, was the Deloitte Money League that got released today, I think, and saying basically that West Ham are the 18th richest club in Europe, which Jonesy pointed out to me earlier on, which basically means we're the 18th richest club in the world, yet we're still 16th in the Premier League, and of all the teams above us, they're all in the regularly in the Champions League. We haven't been even close to Europe.
We must be the only team in the top 30 of that thing, so never even playing the Champions League.
There was a couple of things that Brady said in response, though, that sort of stood out to me. He said, yeah, we've invested £200 million in the team. Well, that's over 10 years, £20 million a year. That's nothing, is it, for a Premier League team?
That's over the last two summers, though, isn't it?
Well, literally, yeah. That those are the figures that she said to Ian King.
Can't argue with the facts, James. Is she what she said?
Every asset we have is in a person, whatever that means.
That's because they haven't got a stadium anymore.
Well, that's true, yeah. And it's like, oh God, yeah, that's loads different to all the other football clubs.
She did say, and when you sign a player for £65 million, they take time to manage.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. Whether you sign players for £20 million, £45 million or £65 million, it's like, well, how would you know? We've never signed a player for £65 million, so stop right there. And yeah, it was weird that she didn't count the porter cabin at Rush Green as one of the assets, because that's what, another £3 grand on top, isn't it?
They're renting that off
Airbnb,
off Dagenham and Redbridge. And apparently we're, because that Ian King as well said, have you got any plans to actually sign anyone this transfer window, given the current state of your team? She said, oh yes, me and the team are trying very hard.
Usual
in the transfer window. So nothing particularly new, but no, a couple of the bits did tickle me, and applause to Ian King for the deadpan nature of the question.
A couple of classic quotes there from Cam Brady. When you see and you watch and you hear these interviews, and then you see the Money League and you're 18th there, as James said, you know, 18th club, not just maybe in Europe, but richest in the world. Clubs, you know, powerhouses from Europe, but one of the fourth, fifth English highest teams in there, and yet you're not in those European places. When you see that, does it feel like the fans are being fleeced? Does it sort of get the back up and you hear these quotes? How does it really make you feel, James?
See, normally when this comes out on a yearly basis, you think, cool, you know, I can't believe we're up there. You know, how are West Ham up there as a rich club in the world? But then, you know, over the last couple of years, I've seen it and gone, well, hang on. If we're up there, then why aren't we competing on the pitch with these teams? As I said before, We must be what the only club in at least definitely in that top 20, potentially the top 30, that have never played Champions League football, European football. We played Europa League and Cup Winners' Cup back in the day and all that, but European Cup, Champions League football, we've never played in that competition, yet we're the 18th richest club in Europe, potentially the world. I mean, that's unacceptable. Where is that money? And we've not even got a stadium anymore, so that's an expense no longer there. And it's, you know, the club need to actually answer the fans that question, because it's actually a disgrace if you look at it, that we're not competing with these clubs on the pitch. It's what we're supposed to be doing. It's a football match, you know. We're a football team. It's a business as well. That's what the sport is. But you can't compete in business and not compete on the football. And all the fans care about is the football. And we're not doing that. So what is happening? What's going wrong?
She also said, Cambridge, she went, it's weird that a football business, because we don't manufacture anything, we don't produce. And that got a chuckle from Will, because Will said, we definitely don't produce. But there were some odd statements, and James is right, because you look at that, 18th on the list, but certainly we haven't seen that on the field and off it, Will.
No, I genuinely, it's weird. I was watching it earlier on, and I know we'd sort of made light of it then, but it is poor. It's just the same old fodder we're used to hearing. And
why does it get churned out though consistently? Because there's got to be a point when, I don't want to say fans push back. We've almost seen that bear. We go, this isn't the case. Look, you know what you're saying. We're not buying this anymore.
I think, I'll be honest, I think it's you know, these are huge outfits with lots of money. The PR training on the language you use and all that sort of thing. There's so much that goes into it, but. Luckily, and I think you see it when players do interviews or managers, it's the same old stuff after every game, isn't it? Oh, yeah, I'm not about individual awards, looking to the next game, blah, blah, blah. These are all like pre-prepared scripts. And I think people did buy into it at the beginning. But like you said, when people start pushing back, there's plenty of fans who have started doing that already, despite the huge win against Bournemouth that everyone was so pleased with. There's been some, I think we're going to move on to that in a bit.
Yeah, big club mentality.
There's been some talks again about protests and and that sort of thing.
Really? Is it? So maybe we may see a movement that's starting to see that.
I genuinely find it intriguing, because when I know Twitter is such a microcosm of opinion, and you only often hear...
I know.
But you only often hear negative opinions. We know that. The people who come out and say positive things never really get... Well, you never really go on Twitter and say something positive.
They get shot down by the people with the negative opinions.
Yeah, exactly.
Or so, it just doesn't get one like. Positive opinions don't really go viral.
No, well, you're right. But I'm intrigued. I genuinely am intrigued to hear from people, or, you know, call up tonight if you've listened to what Cam Brady said today, or you genuinely... feel that we're in the right hands with those three. I genuinely am, because I say, you go on Twitter and the people you speak to, I don't know anyone, honestly anyone, who goes, no, like, lay off them. We're all right as we are. We should stick with those three. I genuinely don't know anyone, not just from Twitter, but in real life as well. Obviously, speak to a lot of West Ham fans a lot of the time.
When you talk about the board like that, and you talk about those three, what has changed, or what made you believe at the start of the season? Because I feel like I've gone on this journey with you, and I also feel a little bit deflated hearing you talk then, and the highs and the lows. But what made you at the start go, this is our year, this is better this year, you know, we may see it finally, we've signed some players, West Ham, we're going to go to that next step, we're going to take that next step and climb that ladder, and now we're seemingly back where we always are.
I think the difference is that on the pitch at the beginning of the season, it was quite encouraging, barring the opening day of the season against City, but that's right off. We knew that was coming. There were probably positive signs up until the moment Fabianski got injured, but that still didn't take away the fact that the board have underachieved massively, and, you know, if anything, have done the most unacceptable job as football owners in Premier League history, if not, you know, probably in Europe, if you take into account everything that's gone on in these last 10 years. What happened at the beginning of this season, or the last season at the Bowling Ground, or I don't know, last season under Pellegrini, where it was relatively steady, that still doesn't take away the fact that the owners, David Gold and David Sullivan, have done a disgraceful job, have done a really, really poor job at running this football club. And yeah, okay, after the Burnley protests a couple of years ago, it all kind of all sort of steadied out a little bit and calmed down a little bit, and fans were quite happy with Pellegrini for a little while. But I've said on many occasions, people have asked me, you know, the fans like the board now. It's like, well, no, I don't think that's a relationship that can ever be fixed. And I think now, after what's happened over the last, say, month or so, it's well beyond fixing. Those bridges are completely gone now, and you know, they need to sell.
I agree with most of what James says there. I do still think, and one of the bits of PR language that is thrown out all the time, one bit I do agree with, I do think we're in a better position now. Stadium aside, I just mean purely financially, we were actually sort of close to ruin, weren't they?
Financially, we're far better off.
So I do agree with that. I've said it time and time again, and I won't stop saying it till I die, probably. But the Olympic Stadium and the move there will be their legacy regardless. But yeah, like I said, we could win the league next year, and they'll still be known as the board who moved us from Upton Park. And yeah, I just think it becomes, as the time rumbles on, when you see like interviews like Brady's given today, the rhetoric's changed. When we moved, it was all, oh, we're going to be challenging. And I've seen a few comparisons this week, which I totally agree with Newcastle and their running under Ashley, where just survival and existence is the aim. And ultimately, that's not what we were promised. And West Ham fans, not just West Ham fans, but football fans as a whole and people in society, if you promise something and you go into a deal with someone, if the other person or the other group or the other party doesn't hold up their end of the bargain, you end up with people upset or calling for the things that they were promised in the first place.
Yeah, and just quickly, Will, because I think you both made good points there. On that narrative, when you say, look, West Ham are in financial ruin and they've changed that, they've brought you out of that, do you think they go, well, you know, not we've saved West Ham, but, you know, we look at the results in that way and we go, we've done a great job. We don't see it everything else, 200 million in 10 years. We go, look where West Ham were, look where they are now as a business. We've done a brilliant job. That's our legacy.
Ultimately, it's just such a basic thing to say, and it really, but ultimately...
But they say that, won't they? No, and they will sit on that.
Sorry, what I was about to say is a bit of a basic thing to say. It's hard to look into anything more than they're just in it for the money now. It's just a business, because there's just been so much out, and I try not to get as hot-headed and straight into it, and I hate the board and da-da-da as everyone else. I really do, but in this situation we're in now, there's just out-and-out contempt being shown for fans, and it has been for some time, and I think the stadium move was the ultimate insult, and then not to hold up your end of the bargain after that, it's just, like James says, bridges burn.
I think the reality is that 10 years ago, anyone with a pound note could have bought us and improved us financially. It just happened to be them. They happened to be West Ham fans, so they keep telling us. And so back 10 years ago, it was a match made in heaven. It was like, brilliant, we've been saved, and it's all going to be great. They promised Champions League football, potentially the Olympic Stadium. The stadium was amazing. And we were blinded by that because we were so close to ruin.
Do you think everyone... Well, I still don't think everyone was blinded by the
move. I was all for the stadium move up until the moment it actually happened. And then I walked into that stadium and went, it's a nice stadium, but it's not what we were promised. And I've always said I quite enjoy going every week, to be fair. I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it is, but it's still not as good as Upton Park. Never will be. And it's not what we were promised. So they've broken that promise, Champions League promise, all these promises. But it's all very well being better off financially. But the fans don't care about the finances. We care about what goes on in that football pitch, and we're no better off.
Well, this 10 is exactly years later. The fans don't care about. What are you making of it? Have your say. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Get your Hammers views heard. 0208 7020 558. We're going to be doing an Everton preview next, and Paul McParland from the Footy Times is joining us.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the West Ham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joining the studio with We Are West Ham. We're Pugh and James Jones. A brilliant show so far, having a debate on the owners that West Ham are having, the time they're having in the Premier League. Well, now we look to the Everton game. Remember, there is still time for you to have your say tonight. What do you think of the board and the team so far? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Well, it is an Everton preview, and we're talking to Paul McParland from These Football Times. Paul, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time. Obviously, two teams with new managers, hoping for that new manager bounce, going well for Everton. David Moyes is returning, obviously, to his former club. Key clash on the weekend, but what are you making of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting fixture, you know, particularly with David Moyes coming up against, you know, his former club, Everton, again. But I think, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, if Marco Silva still being in charge at Goodison, I think that would be a nailed on home victory for West Ham, even with Pellegrini in charge. But I think the situation's changed quite a bit now with Carlo Ancelotti having assumed the command of Goodison.
Paul, interested to hear, before we go on to the actual game itself, obviously there was stories floating around about Everton getting Moyes before you bought Ancelotti, or before you bought a proper manager in and actually paid some proper money for a manager.
Yeah, which you have to do, don't you?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't know, mate.
Yeah, but wasn't Pellegrini on a good whack at West Ham?
No, he was. But what I mean is, with that, there was stories obviously floating around before that Moyes was going to go to Everton. And, you know, I've said it before, I sort of feel that, maybe wrongly, you might correct me, but West Ham are in that league with, like, Newcastle and Everton in terms of size of fan base, history, etc., etc. I think Everton are obviously a bit further along the path of progression than West Ham are at the moment. But what was your feelings, or what would your thoughts have been when the Moyes stories were floating around about going back to Everton?
Yeah, I mean personally, and I'm sure I wasn't alone in thinking that, but I wasn't particularly interested in David Moyes coming back to join the club. You know, I do think He'd done quite well during his 10 years so Goodison, but football's moved on. I think I really believe it would have been a retrograde step from the club to have appointed David Moyes again. I think the complication was that Bill Tenright, I think, has a bit of a love infatuation with David Moyes, and he was really pushing for David Moyes to come back. But the majority of the fan base wanted a completely different direction from what David Moyes would have given the club.
I know the feeling, Paul.
Yeah,
yeah, I understand. I understand your pain.
Paul, on that, you know, obviously you got Carlo Ancelotti in, and, you know, I know a lot of West Ham fans, me included, would have preferred West Ham to make that move.
Yeah.
Just to have acted a little bit quicker than what we did. But what are your sort of early thoughts on Ancelotti at Everton? Do you see him sort of being a long-term success there? Because I've seen some sort of blogs and articles from fans, not just Everton fans, but sort of neutrals, saying that, you know, perhaps this could prove to be sort of a bit of a wrong move for Everton in the long term.
Well, I think when a manager of Ancelotti's calibre becomes available, you have to take that opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think the way the situation developed was that there was a strong possibility of David Moyes come back to Goodison, but when it became apparent that Ancelotti A was available, and B, when it became apparent that he was interested in the Everton position, which I have to say to our fan base probably came as quite a big surprise to most of us, then obviously you have to go for that. And I know there's a few comments in the press that it's not his type of club. He's used to managing Champions League players, this, that, and the other. But the guy's got his track record is so impressive, and or he can only improve the team. He can only improve the players. Now, when you're saying to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, when I did this at Real Madrid, when I did this at Bayern Munich, when I did this in Milan, this is how we got success. So I can't see this being a bad appointment for Everton at all. And just in terms of when you're trying to sign players, you know, Marco Silva trying to bring you over to Goodison, it's a hard sell. If Carlo Ancelotti trying to bring you to Goodison, I don't think it's a hard sell at all.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, how this one plays out. It feels like a key moment in West Ham's season. But what is your score prediction, Paul, for the weekend?
Well, I think it's going to be a close game. I can guarantee there will be one controversial VAR decision, either for you or for us, during the course of the game. That goes without saying.
Yeah, we didn't need to hear that, Paul.
Yeah. You know, well, we suffered just about on Saturday as well, with the most blatant penalty of the season not being given.
Yeah.
But it's a tough game to call, this one. I think prior to David Moyes being appointed, Pellegrini being in charge, I think it would have been a comfortable victory for us. I'm going to be a bit more cautious. I'm saying a 1-1 draw at the moment.
1-1 draw. Paul, really appreciate you giving your time and coming on the West Ham Fan Show. Paul
McParland
from These Footy Times. Always good to have a chat with Paul, get his thoughts. 1-1 on the weekend then. Is that something you'd take, and how do you see this playing out, James?
I'll say it right, yeah, I'll take a point. Sound like a crack record, don't
yeah.
I?
Play 48 points, yeah, we take it.
Yeah,
mate,
I mean,
yeah.
Normally that's enough to stay
loss,
up. So, and under Karen Brady's thoughts,
come
probably
on, 65
good.
Million players are hard to manage.
Oh, true, yeah, I get that. I think I'd like to think that we've got a chance in this. I think David Moyes has improved us in sort of three games he's been in charge. The Bournemouth game was absolutely fantastic, wasn't it, Will? Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant.
Great win. You love to win 4-0 at home, didn't you?
You
can only beat what's in front of you, Will.
Exactly. You know, Anderson and that. If he's going to get him to play like that,
exactly.
I mean, shrewd appointment.
Then he's gone to Gillingham, got a great win away from home in a tough cup tie.
Previous manager couldn't go to Oxford and get a result. It takes a special manager to get those results.
Real cold Sunday night. Mm.
You're laughing, but it was so boring. Everyone.
What are you making of the Moyes appointment? Because we've not spoke to you, Will. Genuinely on that.
Same as your man Paul was just saying just then. Yeah, I think same as everyone else. It's just a step backwards. I don't know why he was wrong for us at the time. Then I don't know why he's right for us now. 18-month deal. I know everyone's sort of saying he's got a bit more time. It's not a bit more time. It's not that much time, really, is it? I think it lines up nicely with the end of his contract. Lines up nicely with the clause in the stadium deal that says the owners can't sell the club without the 20% add-on fee, you know, etc., etc. So I think it all lines up nicely for a sale of the club at the end of his deal, giving the new owners or the hopeful prospective new owners the chance to bring their own man in. So I like the sound of that. Just means another 18 months or however long it is of grinding our teeth. But no, I'm not particularly impressed, Charlie. I just kept my mouth shut. When it happened over Christmas, I thought, you know what, it's Christmas. I'm staying off Twitter most of the time anyway. I just can't be bothered. So I kept my mouth shut at the time. Not particularly impressed, and I'm still not, to be honest. We beat Bournemouth. I was just so fed up after that of everyone going to me, see, I don't know what you're talking about. You just smashed Bournemouth 4-0, as if like that had sorted everything. I was like, no, we could have put a team together and given Bournemouth a flipping game at the weekend.
I could tell that you had some opinion on the David Moyes thing, though, because I woke up the following morning. The morning after Pellegrini had been sacked, to text from you going, we need a chat, mate. So I've gone, oh my God, what have I done?
That was because he just didn't want you to continuously both wear roll necks.
Yeah,
that wasn't,
maybe.
That wasn't about the Moyes thing.
I phoned him up, he's phoned me back and gone, you all right? So, yeah, you text me and go, oh, did I? Oh, I must have been drunk. I thought you must have been sitting there at 2 o'clock in the morning going, I can't believe it.
No, it was exactly that. I went around my mates for a nice little Christmas evening. There was a load of us there, a few wines and all that sort of stuff. And it happened. I thought, I've had a few wines anyway. The last place I need to be now is Twitter. I have learned some things from you, Jonesy.
Thanks.
So I thought, I'm going to put my phone down.
James,
you need
to learn your own lessons.
I know, yeah.
So I was being all sensible. I just text James, said, we need to have a chat about this in the morning. Basically so I could vent somewhere that wasn't Twitter.
It was a real stern, like, to the point message. Though I thought I'd said something wrong. I thought I'd done something wrong.
That was just a message you sent me.
I was like, oh, no, I forgot to wish you Merry Christmas. Oh, what have I done?
Well, let's keep it on Everton, obviously. How do you think it's going to play out, Will, in your prediction?
Well, Everton have only scored 5 from 5 Premier League games since Ancelotti's taken over. So they've only scored more than one once. So I don't think it's going to be a high scorer.
Wait, the last team that came to West Ham with a stat like that was Newcastle, and they were 3-0 up.
That is true. Yeah,
so,
that is true.
5-0 Everton, isn't it?
Nah, I think we'll lose 1-0.
Oh, I think lose one. James, did you say? I don't think you said your prediction, did you?
No, I didn't.
I know you're going to go 1-0. So I thought,
of course he is.
Nah, not 1-0. I won't 2-0. Go 1-0 this week. Yeah, I'll go for a Desmond 2-2.
Oh, it's so obvious, James. So predictable. Well, 2-2 and Wilson Everton are going to get the 3 points on the weekend. I can imagine already next week's show. We'll say we've got another 18 months of it before the prospective new owners and new manager come in. So it's going to be a long old time. But the West Ham Rogue Players Mystery Players Quiz is back next.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the West Ham Fan Show and Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with We Are West Ham, Will Pugh and James Jones. What a show we're having. We were just talking about the Everton game on the weekend, the transfer business, West Ham 18th in that Money League, and of course the Sheffield United game. But what are you making of everything you've heard tonight? Have your hammer say, tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Well, Will Pugh wasn't here last week. We still had the Rogue Players Quiz, but it is now back. Of course it is. We kick off from last year, and we get to finally continue because now we're in that home stretch, that final stretch. And I'll be honest, Will, I don't currently know the scores, do you?
Yeah. 7-5 to James overall, 15 points difference at the moment, but obviously I've got a couple of weeks to claw back before the points difference comes into it. But this is really where it gets serious, isn't it? It's one of those, this is the business end.
Yeah, this is the business end.
We missed out because it was meant to cut off at Christmas, wasn't it?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and then you decided, oh, I need to have a baby.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Selfish.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So selfish.
Yeah, just what I cut them all and went, no, I'm going to have a baby.
Yeah,
this week.
So,
are you still owing that beer then? No.
I mean, obviously, there was a concession on air, but technically, I could still have pulled it back before Christmas, which I probably would have. Last week, by the way, you and Tom, what a shambles.
I know.
Shambles.
Absolutely shambles.
I'd rather not talk about that.
I was listening back to the pod and I actually got them before you, so I think I get the points.
No,
okay.
No,
just trust me.
Well, James is 7-5 up, so obviously he's got a nice little bit of a cushion. Can he make it three? Can he get a hat-trick in front tonight? This is, of course, the Rogue Player West Ham Mystery Players quiz. It's easy. Three players, five clues. The clues get progressively easier as we go on. When you know it, shout it out. Fingers on the buzz. If you're playing at home, tweet us your answers, WhatsApp your answers, and I will let you know if you are getting them right. Player number one, clue number one. Currently playing for Lokomotiv Moscow. Clue number two, played 14 games for West Ham. Clue number three, debut was against Wigan in the FA Cup 2018. Clue number four, scored twice.
Patrice Evra?
That is incorrect. Clue number four, scored twice for the club.
Figuli?
That is incorrect. They have had one incorrect guess each. There is unlimited amount of guesses. Mm. Last clue, shirt number 18. Shirt number 18. Shirt number 18, Will. Clue number five.
Absolutely binning.
It's when you're back, I get nervous.
Cagliari?
No.
Can we have a recap?
Yeah, a quick recap. Clue number one, currently playing for Lokomotiv Moscow. Clue number two, played 14 games for West Ham. Clue number three, debut was against Wigan in the FA Cup 2018. Clue number four, scored twice for the club. Clue number five, shirt number 18.
Gian Mario.
That is correct.
Unbelievable.
James has taken the lead 1-0, but he may be getting a bit too confident because there is two players. Is that the spark to motivate Will? There's two players left. Will can still win this tonight, but James is off to a flyer. Player number two, clue number one. Product of the youth academy.
Ben Potts.
And actually want to quickly say, Reese, who does this quiz, said that this player number two, he reckons, is the hardest one he's ever done.
He tweeted about this earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, and it got me worried.
Yeah, well, clue number one.
What's his problem?
Clue number one, product of the youth academy. Clue number two, captain England at every youth level from under 15s to under 21s.
Noble.
Incorrect.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Clue number three, only played seven times for West Ham. Clue number four, played 74 times for Ipswich.
Ooh, Chris Cohen.
Incorrect.
Oh, no, it's not.
Clue number five, shirt number 27.
Freddie Sears.
Incorrect. A quick recap on apparently the hardest one tonight. You two, what is the matter with you? Clue number one, product of the youth academy. Clue number two, captain England at every youth level from under 15s to under 21s. Clue number three, only played seven times for West Ham. Clue number four, played 74 times for Ipswich.
Frank Noble?
That is incorrect.
Oh,
clue number
shout,
five,
he won't, you've
shirt passed. Number 27.
Danny Williamson keeps coming to mind.
Incorrect.
There's no timestamps on those clues, though, is there? So it could be 99.
He said it was the hardest one. Do you want to bank it and go on to player number three?
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Player number three, clue number one, began their career in 1985. Clue number two, played for five different London clubs. Clue number three, capped once for England in 1994.
Oh, Jesus.
Clue number four, signed for £300,000 in July 1998. Clue number five, played 56 games in total for West Ham, scoring three goals.
1998. Oh, God, this is nightmare.
Cap once for England.
I'm going to give you a bonus quiz on this last one.
Go on.
Clue number six, recently appeared on Celebrity MasterChef.
Ian Wright.
Eve singing in the Jungle. Recently appeared on Celebrity MasterChef. Yeah, that's a bonus clue number six.
I don't watch MasterChef.
Weirdly, despite the role next.
I couldn't think of anything worse.
Oh, right, player number two and player number three. After you said last week was a shambles, you are stumped. James is currently leading 1-0. If you can't get him, we may have to go to the scoreboard.
Right, come on.
Right,
come on.
Right, we're gonna go through number three again.
No, number two.
All right, number two. Clue number one. Product of the youth academy. Number two. Captain England at every youth level from under 15s to under 21s. Only played seven times for West Ham. Played 74 times for Ipswich.
Jordan Spence?
That is correct.
Bang. Wow. Bang. Great shout. Bang. That's Bang. A great shout.
1-1.
Jordan Spence.
That's a brilliant. Pulled it out of the bag. Pulled it out of the bag.
Breathe.
Well, this is now even more intense because it is 1-1 and this is for the game point tonight.
Just a quick reminder, that one I just got reset, it was the hardest one he'd ever done.
Yeah, there is no bonus points for that. Player number three and the player that matters, clue number one, began their career in 1985. Played for five different London clubs. Capped once for England in 1994. Signed for £300,000 in July 98. Played 56 games in total for West Ham, scoring 3 goals.
Winterburn?
No. Remember, recently appeared on Celebrity MasterChef.
Which me and James have never watched in our entire lives.
I mean...
also appeared in Big Brother 2013.
Neil Ruddock.
That is correct.
Oh, mate, whatever.
2-1 to James. It's another game point.
That's an absolutely ridiculous set of clues, that was.
We needed to round it up.
My mate Razor.
2-1, James. You're now 8-5 in game weeks.
Yeah, to think I was 4-1 down as well.
Absolutely. Wow, 4-1 down.
Was I 4-1 or you were 4-1 down?
I was 4-1 down.
All right.
What's interesting is we'll dine out on the fact that he got the hardest one, but when you're 8-5, it's like VAR. It doesn't matter, does it, James?
It doesn't matter, does it? Yeah.
That one and Mark Reaper, which I still get congratulations about on Twitter.
From your own burner account.
You tweet yourself.
Yeah. Literally, yeah.
At will.
Yeah.
You text yourself at 3 in the morning, we need to chat about that Mark Reaper chat, mate. You read it in the morning, what are you on about? I got that one.
That's a shambles set of clues. Neil Razor Ruddock, and those are the only clues you can think of. I don't like to have a pop at a quiz master who literally props this show up for us every week.
Yeah.
You're a shambles.
Don't blame Reese. No, Reese is on it. He's absolutely.
I think Reese is doing an absolutely fantastic job. Keep it up, mate. Yeah. Keep it up.
8-5.
I couldn't have thought of a better clue for Razor Ruddock.
Yeah, but then it would have been too obvious because I looked at it, Razor, and I thought, they're going to get this straight away. But those were good clues for Razor.
Yeah. Shambles. Shambles of a show.
James, I've got to be honest. 8-5 going forward, I mean, you've got this in a bag, haven't you?
Yeah. When's the cut-off point? On Thursday.
This is vintage Liverpool last season from you, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Has James got a bit of. He can fold. He's got it in him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we know that I've got Jordan Spence and Mark Reaper in the bag, you know, you can never write me off, can you?
I've got me and Razor Ruddock will win this one.
So happy birthday, Declan Rice, by the way. That's one thing.
West Ham's only tangible asset left.
Yeah. As Karen Brady calls
Karen Brady's only asset.
Yeah.
That's £65 million.
Yeah, and I think we've got about a minute and a half for our transfer roundup, which I think is too long.
It's way too long.
Yeah, way too long. We need to break it into sections. Can you talk really slowly, please, Will?
The only headline and the only update generally on our transfer business is that Jonathan Woodgate said Dan Randolph's medical that he's having with us is the longest medical he's ever known any player to have ever.
That's how much of a shambles we are at the moment. We can't even sign an injured goalkeeper.
Yeah, and that's coming from Jonathan Woodgate, perhaps the most injured man the world has ever known.
Yeah, it's worrying, isn't it?
It's completely come full circle. Well, this has been the West Ham Fan Show with We Are West Ham, Will Pugh and James Jones. Of course, we'll be back next week to discuss that Everton game, to play the West Ham Mystery Players quiz, to see if Will can get back into it. We will see you at the same time every Tuesday, 7 to 8, right here on Love Sport Radio. Love Sport.